Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Radio Boston. I'm Indira Lakshmanan, and we begin today in Cleveland, where it is day two of the greatest show on earth this week, the Republican National Convention. And it's a big day. The convention will officially nominate Donald Trump for president and Mike Pence for vice president. And the votes from Trump's home state of New York are expected to take him over the top. For more on what's expected at the RNC and what's happened so far, we're joined now by WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks, who's at our studio at the convention in Cleveland. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, Indira.
So today's theme is Make America Work Again. So what can we expect to hear about jobs and the economy?
Well, we're going to hear a lot about Donald Trump's abilities as a successful businessman and how he can apply that success to building jobs for America. That's going to be the theme of tonight. And here's some of the language from the RNC, just to give you an idea. Quote, the Obama years have delivered anemic economic growth, job-killing regulations, and legislation like Obamacare. These policies are crushing the middle class. So that's a big theme that you're going to hear. No doubt we'll hear a lot more about trade deals like the Trans-Pacific Partnership and NAFTA, which Trump says are terrible for American workers. So whereas last night was about national security, law and order, tonight is about economic security and how to help middle-class Americans.
All right. So who are today's main speakers, and do we have any preview of what exactly they'll be saying?
Well, here are some of the big names. Governor Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas. No doubt he'll have a lot to say about Hillary Clinton, the former First Lady of Arkansas. We'll also hear from U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, House Speaker Paul Ryan, who's the chairman of the convention. And Ryan's speech is going to be really, really interesting. I'm looking forward to this because while he's obviously fervently opposed to the Democrat Hillary Clinton, he's had a tough time navigating support for Donald Trump. So it'll be really interesting to see how he threads that needle.
Yeah, also, tough one. He's really seemed uncomfortable about some of Donald Trump's seemingly racist remarks, and he's not backed those.
Yeah, it's true. And so I think what you're going to hear is really a case against Hillary. And that's sort of been the interesting thing so far, Indira, is there's a lot that we heard yesterday in terms of the case against Hillary. In terms of the case for Donald Trump, we'll see how much Paul Ryan can do that. Also tonight, we're going to hear from Governor Chris Christie, Dr. Ben Carson, and Donald Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr. Those are some of the people we're going to be hearing from.
All right. Well, let's talk about yesterday's open floor revolt. There was an effort by the so-called Never Trump delegates to block his nomination by releasing delegates to vote their conscience. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, there was sort of a mutiny of sorts. So a minority of Never Trump delegates were trying to pass a rule that would have required the chairman of the convention to call the roll, essentially a show of opposition to Donald Trump. Trump supporters would have won the vote easily, but opponents could have slowed the process, gone on record as opposing him. They could have embarrassed him. So among the delegates demanding the roll call were a number of Massachusetts delegates, but in the end, their effort was squashed. So here's Arkansas Representative Steve Womack putting an end to the insurrection.
The question is on adoption of the resolution. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, no. In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it, and the resolution is agreed to.
So, Indira, the effort was defeated, but the delegates in revolt continued to demand a roll call vote. This is a little bit of what it sounded like.
Point of order! Point of order! Point of order!
Okay, wow. That sounds really raucous.
It was raucous. So the anti-Trump efforts, anti-Trumpers lost that effort.
Okay, but Anthony, you were mentioning that some of the Massachusetts delegates were those opposed, part of the Dump Trump movement, and you have one of those delegates with you.
Well, Bob McGinn is the former chair of the Republican Party in Massachusetts. He served in that role from 2011 to 2013. He's a Marco Rubio delegate. He's also a member of the platform committee, and he was there last night, and yesterday. And Bob McGinn, good to have you here on Radio Boston. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Anthony and Indra.
So, tell us your take on what happened yesterday. Should that vote have gone forward? What's your view?
Well, you know, I think because they had a chance the week before on the Rules Committee to simply get 28 of 112 members of the Rules Committee to allow a conscience vote by the delegates, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
In some ways you could say it's pretty pathetic that they couldn't even get 28 out of 112. And so with that, you have to say that the outcome was certain. You know, I think actually in... kind of a contrarian view, it might have actually helped Trump to have the roll call.
Now, why? Explain that.
Well, because he probably would have, you know, he got 41% of the vote when we, in the primary process, he probably would have got 82% of the vote. And I could just imagine Donald Trump standing up and saying, I doubled my numbers from 41 to 82. This is a united party. So
yeah.
I think he actually could have spun that to his advantage if it had gone forward.
Well, what's your view as a delegate, Bob, though, in terms of this sort of dump Trump, this never Trump movement? I mean, have we seen the end of it? Because, you know, I was talking to one of your fellow delegates from Massachusetts, and he said, look, Donald Trump won fair and square during the primary. As you said, they couldn't even get those 28 votes to change the rule in committee. I mean, isn't this kind of done? And shouldn't people just kind of give up and accept the fact that Donald Trump is going to be the nominee?
You know, I think that it's hard for a lot of people, to swallow Donald Trump, as we know. Out of 17 candidates, the majority of people, as I said, 60% wanted somebody else. But the fact is, he is the one that got the most votes. That's democracy. We don't always like democracy. It's messy and sometimes ends up where we don't want it to be. But that's what we got. And I think people need to just face the facts. One of two people is going to be the president of this country in January, getting sworn in. It's either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And, you know, take your choice.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. McGinn, I want to jump in here and ask you, do you worry that these protests could actually damage the party's chances in November if there is perceived to be, or if there actually is a divided Republican Party? Could that lead to Hillary Clinton in the White House?
You know, there is indeed that risk. I think that when people who are most likely to vote Republican peel off. So I think it's the peeling off. You know, if people feel like I can go vote for the Libertarians or the Green Party, or I can write in someone else's name, you know, especially in swing states, that could really hurt us. And so I think for Republicans, we do need to come together and just face the fact that, you know, we're running a candidate against Hillary Clinton. This is about, not allowing Hillary Clinton to continue four more years of what's been going on for the last 8 years.
And Bob, let me ask you, as a Marco Rubio supporter, I mean, what you've seen going on here for the last 24 hours or so, I mean, do you sense that this convention is beginning to do what it needs to do, and that is sort of creating party unity around Donald Trump?
Yeah, Anthony, I actually came here last Monday, a week ago, for the platform committee. And that was when I really sensed the ideological base of the party coming together. We wrote, like, if you go around here and ask people, the one thing I think you will find near unanimous agreement on is that we wrote the best platform in, you know, the modern Republican history. And there are things in there that I put in there that most of your listeners would not expect to be in there, like increasing foreign aid to the poor, human rights, combating, sexual trafficking, sex trafficking, and, things that the Republican Party has always been strong on.
Mm.
But Donald Trump has come on board for this platform. He's really endorsed this platform and, you know, has said to a lot of us that this is one of the ways, Mike Pence being another one, but this is one of the ways that he's trying to pull the Republican Party together.
All right, Mr. McGinn, I want to ask you, last night we heard some really impassioned rhetoric from Rudy Giuliani, who was, of course, a former presidential hopeful 8 years ago. He was mayor of New York during the September 11th attacks. I want to play a clip here of Giuliani, who took last night's Make America Safe Again theme and overlaid the current hot-button issue of race and policing.
We know the risk you're taking. And we say thank you to every police officer and law enforcement agent who's out tonight protecting us, black, white, Latino, of every race, every color, every creed, every sexual orientation. When they come to save your life, they don't ask if you are black or white. They just come to save you.
So, a return to the law and order candidate.
Boy, that was a great speech by Rudy, and I think that, you know, he says what a lot of people in the Republican Party want to hear, you know, and that's that we do not reject people of other faiths, of other gender orientations, of other races or creeds, but we often get painted that way. So that what he was saying, I think, is what so many of us believe.
Well, Anthony, I want to ask you something, because
sure.
Rudy Giuliani didn't just praise law enforcement. He also attacked Hillary Clinton, saying she couldn't protect America. He used some pretty wild arm gestures and angry facial expressions during this speech, not unlike Mr. Trump does himself at times, for that matter. The theme was Make America Safe, but it felt to some people like he was trying to instill fear. Let's listen to a clip.
In the last 7 months, there have been five major Islamic terrorist attacks on us and our allies. We must not be afraid to define our enemy. It is Islamic extremist terrorism.
So, Anthony, yep. What do you make of this?
Well, Indira, I mean, I appreciate the question, you know, this idea of the possibility of instilling fear as opposed to making a case for Donald Trump. And, you know, I'd like to bring Bob McGinn back into this conversation, because this is really a question for the delegates. I mean, it seems like this is a tricky sort of tightrope to walk. I mean, you want to make a case that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have not been able to do the job of keeping America safe, but is it, you know, at what point is there a risk where it looks, sounds like you're sort of exploiting people's fears, I guess.
Yeah.
Did Rudy Giuliani walk that line satisfactorily in your view?
Well, you know, if you think back to the 2004 election, the Republican Party strategy that, you know, fell out of a briefcase in Central Park was we need to make the race about national security.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans win on national security. That's how George W. Bush won against John Kerry. And so I don't think that from a Republican point of view, you can overstate the case on the need for a strong America. You know, that is one of the biggest complaints that Republicans have against Barack Obama, is that he's been too apologetic in the world, leading from behind. And, you know, Hillary Clinton has been too cozy, in my opinion, with the Chinese. You know, she wouldn't stand up for human rights there. And so these challenges that we see in foreign policy, which is the true purview of the president, is the, I think, the most important thing. I'm a business person, you know. Yes, the president can help me in my business, but the president will do a lot more with regard to our foreign policy. So,
you know,
all right. Well, I'm sure we are going to be hearing a lot more from Hillary Clinton defending her point of view on this 1 week from now. Bob McGinn is the former chair of the Republican Party in Massachusetts and a Marco Rubio delegate. Thank you so much for joining us, Bob.
Thank you, Indra.
Anthony, I want to talk to you now about one of the stranger stories out of the RNC's opening night, which is the controversy over possible plagiarism in the speech given by Donald Trump's wife, Melania. Let's listen.
From a young age, my parents impressed on me the values that you work hard for what you want in life.
So now let's hear another familiar voice from another political spouse.
And Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values. Like, you work hard for what you want in life.
That's Michelle Obama speaking at the 2008 Democratic National Convention.
That your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're going to do.
And here's Melania Trump last night.
That your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise.
So, Anthony, what has the reaction been there among delegates? And could the accusations of supposed plagiarism hurt the Trump campaign?
Well, couple of things. I mean, you know, first, we should point out that the Trump campaign on Tuesday denied the allegations that Melania Trump plagiarized Michelle Obama's speech. Here's a little bit of what Paul Manafort, Trump's campaign chairman, said. To think that she would do something like that, knowing how scrutinized her speech was going to be last night, is just really absurd. In terms of the way the delegates are reacting, I mean, obviously, I think they would have preferred, this was the big moment, supposed to be the big moment in yesterday's speech. So, you know, I've got a big TV screen above me. CNN has been sort of running this story all day long. So, yeah, I think Republicans here are obviously disappointed that this has become the story when what they would have preferred was that this is would have been a great story about Donald Trump. I mean, I think the other thing that you hear from some of the delegates is concern that there was a missed opportunity, that while she did a very good job delivering a speech to a big primetime audience, she missed an opportunity to really tell a personal story mm-hmm. that sort of humanized Donald Trump. So I'm hearing that as well. But in terms of, you know, do allegations of plagiarism, is that story going to have legs and sort of carry us all the way through the convention? No. I think this is a 24-hour moment in this convention, and we're going to move on to other speeches. The candidates are going to be nominated, and there'll be a lot more to talk about. That's my view.
All right. That's WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks in Cleveland. Thank you so much, and we will catch up with you again tomorrow, Anthony.
Look forward to it, Indira.
So for more now, we're joined in our studio by Alex Goldstein, who was a top political advisor to former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. He worked closely on the governor's 2012 speech at the Democratic National Convention. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Alex, you helped write a convention speech, and I imagine that the pressure and the scrutiny in doing that job is intense. So what I'm wondering is, how could a speechwriter have possibly included this mm-hmm. language so close to Michelle Obama's speech? And how could the higher-ups in the Trump campaign miss the similarities with another quite recent convention speech?
Well, you're absolutely right. I remember that time vividly because I wasn't sleeping or eating at all because we were spending so much time perfecting the speech. It was a primetime speech back in 2012. And I actually remember that we had probably about 50 footnotes and citations in that speech that we submitted to the Obama campaign well in advance of the convention to make sure that it was fully vetted. I can't imagine there were fewer than a dozen eyes that looked over that speech. So you're certainly right to raise that question. And I think it's sort of indicative of a broader trend of sort of dishevelment in the Trump campaign apparatus. And I think this is yet another example. I think, you know, to Anthony's point, I don't think that this is a story that's going to linger that long. But both the lead up to how something like this could have happened and also the fallout afterwards and sort of the chaos in the response to it are actually, to me, the bigger story than the actual, you know, incident itself.
Huh, interesting. All right. Well, then let's do our own autopsy here on how this has been handled, since you're calling it a deadly thing. The Trump campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was on CNN's New Day this morning. Chris Cuomo, the anchor, asked him about the similarities in the two speeches. And Cuomo referenced the moment in 2008 when then-Senator Hillary Clinton accused then-Senator Barack Obama of plagiarizing some lines from your boss, Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick.
I don't think it's an allegation. It's not some suggestion without proof. I think it happened. I don't understand why the campaign doesn't just own it and say people borrow phrases. That's what happened and moved on. That's what, ironically, Obama did in 2008 when Clinton said that he cribbed from Deval Patrick. He said, yeah, you're right, I did it.
No, he did do it. That's correct. But in this particular case,
but,
you know, there was a process
Melania
certainly
did.
Of collaboration. And certainly there's no feeling by her on her part that she did it. What she did was use words that are common words. And to expect her to think that she would do something like that, knowing how scrutinized her speech was going to be last night, is just really absurd.
Well, I mean, I also find it a bit strange that Manafort is acting as if Melania Trump wrote this speech.
Right.
I mean, clearly a speechwriting team wrote this speech. And so how do you think Manafort handled the situation?
Well, I think it's sort of the classic politics of doubling down. And I don't think he handled it particularly well. If you look at that incident from 08, which I remember quite well, the reason that story moved on very, very quickly was because the president owned up to it immediately. And Governor Patrick came out and said, yeah, we do share ideas from time to time. And that was it. And they moved on. And I think they could have easily sort of killed this a lot quicker had they moved a little bit quicker in that regard. And now what sort of happened is that the sort of irony here is that it's the Trump campaign and various different members, anonymous sources and other leaders within the campaign that are giving this story legs and legs and legs and keeping it going. You've had all these different people throughout the day, including the chairman of the RNC, come out with sort of different recommendations and versions of what likely happened or could have happened and who ought to be fired.
So. Well, you know, you remind us that then Senator Obama acknowledged that Deval Patrick had suggested a couple of lines. And he says, rather, Obama said at the time, I thought they were good lines. I'm sure I should have credited him.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're pointing out, the Trump campaign is not saying, gee, we saw some lines and we thought they were good lines. But how typical is it for advisors and speechwriters to draw from other speeches?
Well, you know, I could say that from my experience and from watching Governor Patrick, he's a guy that writes a lot of this stuff himself. And I'm certain that he calls upon inspiration from other speakers and, you know, other speeches he's experienced in the past. But I personally, when I write, it's original content. And I say probably the same for him as well. And if we have any concern, we're going to run that down really, really quickly to make sure we don't end up in a situation like this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this was more than just two words, which is mm-hmm. what Deval Patrick and Barack Obama agreed on. I mean, there was also the yes, we can
right,
line,
right.
which Deval Patrick had used and Barack Obama, of course, used. But let's hear one more example of the similarities between Michelle Obama and Melania Trump.
We want our children and all children in this nation to know that the only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams and your willingness to work hard for them.
Because we want our children in this nation to know that the only limit to your achievements is the strength of your dreams and your willingness to work for them.
All right, so not to blame Melania Trump here, since she was clearly handed a speech to read. But again, I wonder, is this going to have any long-term impact on her and the rest of the campaign? And also, more importantly, is it going to harm Donald Trump's reputation as a supposedly authentic candidate? There was this recent Quinnipiac poll that found that 44% of respondents chose Trump over Hillary Clinton mm-hmm. as supposedly more trustworthy and honest.
Well, so I think at this point in the campaign, I've seen so many things that have bewildered me that I'd be crazy to say what's going to hurt anyone at this point. But, you know, having said that, I think the real impact here is actually less the incident itself, but more, I think there's actually issues for both Democrats and Republicans. I think for the Democrats, the concern here is that there was a lot of wild stuff that was said yesterday at the convention. There were things that were xenophobic, that were Islamophobic, that were borderline racist. And you had Steve King from Iowa saying the most unbelievable things on the air around the convention. And all of that has been drowned out. And Democrats have sort of lost the chance to pay attention to some of those issues and bring those to light. And I think on the Republican side, the challenge is that, as was sort of mentioned earlier, this is the ultimate choreographed moment. You get these 4 days and they are this pristine, beautiful thing that you don't want to let go of. And they want them to go perfectly. And you're already 0-1. You've lost day one because all you were talking about is this incident. And I think both sides actually suffer from this distraction because we're not talking about anything I think ultimately the American people really care about. Now, I will say that in terms of credibility, sure, there might be a sort of short-term shot to Trump's credibility. But boy, if you thought he was credible, you know, to this point, I don't think this is enough to make you suddenly believe he isn't. But I think for many of us, we lost that credibility a long, long, long time ago.
All right. Really fascinating. We're going to keep watching this. Alex Goldstein was a top political advisor to former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. He worked with him closely on his 2012 speech at the Democratic National Convention. And he's now vice president at Northwind Strategies in Boston. Thanks so much for speaking with us, Alex.
Thank you so much for having me.
And stay with us. There's much more ahead. I'm Indira Lakshmanan, and this is Radio Boston.